This is Fresh Air. The band NRBQ is usually described something like this. Either you've never heard of them, or you love them. There's a lot of cult bands out there, but NRBQ has outlasted most of them. It was founded in 1968, the initials standing for the New Rhythm and Blues Quartet. NRBQ's enormous repertoire ranges from originals to rock and roll classics and TV themes like Batman and Bonanza. My guest, Terry Adams, is a co-founder of the group, its pianist, and a songwriter and arranger. A lot of NRBQ fans think it's hard to capture the group's spontaneity and chemistry on record, but their new record is an attempt to do just that. Honest Dollar is a collection of live recordings from the band's private tape archives, spanning 1981 to 1991. The selections were made by Adams, who also produced the album. Before we meet him, let's listen to the opening track from a performance recorded in Hartford, Connecticut in 1988.
What good is the other? And I can't find no true love. Oh, baby, it's so hard. And I still think about you every time I'm riding in my car. Well, I went to the place where everybody hangs out to see what everybody wasn't talking about. And over in the corner all alone with you was the boy from last summer singing songs to you.
Now, you're the one who calls the tunes on stage and decides, like, what to play. Do you read the audience when you're performing and try to figure out what's going to work that night?
I do. I don't feel comfortable with a prearranged idea of what we're going to play. It's never worked for us. We tried it maybe 20 years ago once, and I don't know. You really can't predict how a room is going to feel or how an audience is going to be and what's going to be needed at a particular time.
Let me get back to the new CD. Do you have a favorite from here that you'd like to play?
Well, I like Al singing on It's a Sin to Tell a Lie. It was the first time we ever did it, and I remember we were holding up the guy who sells the T-shirts was holding up the lyrics for him, and I think he did a great job on it.
We didn't know the song?
No, we'd never done it before. I think maybe half of the songs on there we had never done before.
So this is kind of perverse of you to call a tune that nobody knows.
We used to do the thing in the 70s with a magic box, we called it, where people would put songs in and we'd pull them out of there and undo them. But we don't do that anymore. It's not as much fun as it was then. But that was the idea was it was fun for us to do just what you said, not know the chords, what key it's going to be in, or the lyrics, and see what comes out of it.
Now, you grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. What was the rock scene like when you were growing up? Was there much of one?
It was, 10 years behind whatever was really going on in the rest of the world, generally.
Can you remember an example of what was happening that was so far behind the rest of the world?
And it's hard to say, you know. I left there in 66, but... Mm-hmm. By then, I'd say that the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were well established in the rest of the world. But in Louisville, if you were in a band and your hair, if I let my hair grow just to touch the top of my ears, I could be thrown out of that band, you know, by a booking agency or whatever. In fact, I was. I know hair isn't music, but I'm just giving you an example of what was going on where I grew up.
So a booking agency threw you out of the band because your hair was touching your earlobes?
Yes, and we're talking about 1966. So,
what kind of band was it?
Well, they named themselves after the English sound. They were called the Merseybeats USA, but yet when it really came to living it, they weren't ready for it. But I had to make my own way in Louisville. I had to seek out music. I had to find things that weren't readily available there.
Was there a record shop you could go to?
I had to special order my stuff through the mail, or, you know, to find out about Sun Ra, or the Thelonious Monk, Paul Bley, Carla Bley, all that kind of stuff. You had to seek it out. I would like to see people today seek out music like we did.
Makes it more thrilling when you get it, though, when you've worked so hard to find it. Yeah,
that's great.
So, yeah, everybody who you just mentioned is a jazz musician, you know, jazz pianist, in fact. So how come you ended up going more in a rock direction, being so influenced by jazz?
Well, I was influenced by everything. I, like I say, Link Wray was my early great influence, and Thelonious Monk as a pianist. I think that I just, through growing up, remember discovering jazz, and for a brief period, maybe about a week, you know, not hiding, but putting my rock records in a different corner so that I was now officially a jazz person. You know, there was some kind of idea, and I think it's still going on today, where if you like a certain kind of music, you have to sign up for it, like it's some kind of club with membership dues or something. But it didn't take me long to figure it out when the Beatles came out, that all music was one thing. And whatever you call it, it's all one thing.
You actually started playing trumpet, right?
Yeah, I started out as a trumpet player.
Why did you start on trumpet?
I don't know. My brother Don played trombone, and there was no piano around the house, so I hadn't even thought of piano yet.
Uh-huh. And that lasted for, what, a year before you started piano instead?
No, a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. What made you realize that the piano was really your instrument?
Basically, that you could play more than one note at a time. It thrilled me to play two notes at once, three notes at once.
Mm-hmm. What were the first licks on piano that you learned to play, say, from a record or something, when you realized, I can really do this?
I don't know. I think I started playing Sentimental Journey, because that's the song that we used to play on the doorbell.
How many notes did you have on your doorbell?
Two.
Well, there's four in the song.
Well, you can get, let's see, you can get through the first 3.5 bars in Sentimental Journey with two notes.
Uh-huh. That's true.
And they
No.
There's
four. There's four.
Where do you get four?
Da 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 da.
No.
It lowers.
No, it doesn't. Let's do it again. Da da da
da da da da da.
It stays on the same two notes.
I'm tone deaf when I sing, but I'm sure that the note changes. But
no, it doesn't.
All right.
Ask your many fans out there to write in.
Oh, yeah, well.
And then it changes. Yeah. Okay, so that's our song on the doorbell.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, you know, when you sing it, I hear you're probably right, though, in my head. In the version that plays in my head, we change notes.
the next 8 bars does.
Right, right. So
you're just skipping ahead. You're moving on.
Right.
You're an impatient person.
What kind of bands were you in, besides this band that you were fired from because of your hair?
Well, that's pretty much it. I had a jazz trio when I was 14 or so.
Uh-huh.
That we played regularly on a television show in Louisville.
A television show? Local show?
Uh-huh, called High Varieties. Teen Talent of Kentuckiana.
Was it a talent showcase kind of show?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Those are great.
Yeah, they were great.
That's some of the best amateur television around.
I know. I got thrown off of there, too, though. So.
What'd you do?
I started, the music advanced, you know. We had heard Ornette Coleman, and we're starting to play Free. And
I'm sure that went over real big.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty. You know, it's funny about Ornette Coleman. The people were so frightened at the time, I remember, but it was such a simple, friendly music.
Mm-hmm.
And simple and harmless. If you hear those recordings he did for Atlantic, you can hear just what was all the fuss about. It sounds like very nice people.
My guest is Terry Adams, co-founder of the band NRBQ. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Terry Adams is my guest of the band NRBQ. They have a new album called Honest Dollar. Now, since we've been talking about like jazz and rock and how you really love both and have been inspired by both, I thought maybe we could play your version of Monk's Little Rudy Tootie that's on a Monk anthology that Hal Wilner produced of like different jazz and rock groups playing Monk compositions. I'm going to kind of jump ahead to your solo in this. And I think it's really interesting. You're doing this really Monk-inspired solo over a really driving rock beat played by the drummer.
Right.
Is that challenging?
No. You know, Monk's music swung harder than rock and roll, really. It's just
Oh, I know, but
whether you're hearing the beat on the snare drum or the hi-hat really is the difference.
Uh-huh.
You know.
The beat just seems in... It's just a completely different kind of drumming than you'd ever hear on a Monk record.
Yeah, definitely a louder snare drum than any Monk player, Monk's drummer would have done. I like, to me, when I play the music of Thelonious Monk, I can't separate the composition from the style. I hear a lot of it, since he's died, a lot of people play his songs, and I think that's great. But I don't know, whenever I play, I think it's a whole thing. It's not just the song, but it's the whole spirit should remain throughout all the solos, everything. You know, I think that's the way to really be true to his music.
In addition to playing piano, you also often play the clavinet. Why don't you describe what a clavinet is?
It's a stringed instrument. It's I think it's the same thing as a clavichord, which is a Baroque instrument, isn't it? I'm not sure, but a clavichord was a quiet stringed instrument in the 1600s or something, but this has pickups on it. So... it actually has strings. You have to tune it before every performance, sometimes in the middle of a performance. They don't make them anymore. They don't make the strings anymore. I go through about 2 clavinets a year, and I think I only have 2 left. So,
did you stockpile them when you knew they were going out of business?
I try to, but the model that I like to play is harder to find. But it's a thrill for me to play the strings. A lot of people suggest, well, why don't you just play, you know, get this sound, imitated sound, a synthetic version of it on a synthesizer. But believe me, it's not the same. It's the difference in, say, driving a real hot car as the similarities in sitting in front of one of those video screens with a steering wheel.
So what is it that you like so much about the sound of a clavinet?
It gives me a chance to be a guitar player, I think. You know?
But it's a keyboard instrument, isn't it?
I know, but it sounds like a guitar. Sometimes people don't even think that I'm playing on our records. It'll just be a clavinet piece, and they'll think it's Al playing.
What's an example of a record like that?
Well, Me and the Boys is almost all clavinet. Al comes in on the bridge in the middle, and that's about it.
to drive. Me and the boys.
That's Me and the Boys from the NRBQ album Peekaboo. NRBQ has a new album called Honest Dollar on Ryko Disc. I spoke with the band's co-founder, Terry Adams. This is Fresh Air.